This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hello and welcome to Safer, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about goat.
Yes. Oof. What an episode it is.
It is. Yeah. I probably should have specified more than goats. But here we are. I suspect that this is going to be one of those where we have like a few offshoot episodes about, you know, like every dish in creation that uses any kind of goat product. We're probably going to have to start an entire like fiber and fashion podcast in order to talk about goat hair.
Ooh.
And yeah, then do all the episodes about every different type of goat milk cheese on the planet. It's going to be a whole thing, I think, you know?
Wow. A new podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
All
I know
right.
Nothing about fiber or fashion. So
it's going to be great then. It's exciting.
We're all going to be learning together.
Yeah. Well, was there any reason goat was on your mind as a food topic?
You know, I think it had kind of been on the list for a while. And because I enjoy eating goat meat. I like goat milk products. So I was like, yeah, they've got those weird pupils. You know, let's read about them for a few days.
It is true that the goat has a lot of cultural stuff going for it.
Oh, my heck, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was just at the top putting notes here, which I usually do for like banter purposes or just cultural notes that I have, there's so many about goats. I wrote the goat, you're on your own kid, which I think was a title idea that I had.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Evil goats, which
like Black Phillip.
Lauren and I,
we
were like, we could talk about evil goats, but then again, remembered. Food podcast. the bezoar, like the thing in a goat's stomach that is supposedly going to heal you, which we've talked about before in another podcast.
Or tell you the future? Yeah, stuff, right.
Yes.
Which I guess is technically related to ambergris.
Oh.
Because goats and whales are both four-stomached ruminants. And yes, Annie and I recently went on Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a sister podcast, and hung out with Joe McCormick and, talked about ambergris, which is whale gut secretion that the perfume industry decided is the best thing.
It was a fascinating episode. I highly recommend it. It goes places.
I had too much fun.
It was a great time. It was a great time. Friend of the show, Joe McCormick.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes.
One wonderful. Of our D&D group members. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was really fun. Also, I was thinking about Jurassic Park.
The goat. Yeah. Yeah. The goat in Jurassic Park. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Fainting goats have had their moment. There's a fainting goat winery in North Georgia where they have fainting goats. Screaming goats also have had their moment. Many a music video you can watch. my mom had a goat that was named appropriately Billy. And I mean, every time she tells me about Billy, it sounds like he was an angry goat, but he ate everything and was useful. Which I have heard, this is a new thing for me, but another friend of the show and friend in real life, Samantha from Stuff Mom Never Told You, she recently-ish bought a house and she looked into hiring goats for lawn service.
Oh, yeah. I had neighbors that would do that sometimes in one of my houses I was renting a while back.
I'd never heard of that, but I guess it's a thing.
Yeah. It was pretty cool because, like, the goat would just be hanging out in their yard, you know, doing goat stuff for a few days, a couple times a year. And it would definitely, like, scream at us when we went to our cars. And so I would just kind of scream back.
Speaking the language of the goat. All right.
I did it often enough that I was like, it's clearly communicating. Like, I might, it's rude if I don't say something.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to be rude to the goat. My goodness. but I mean, that's kind of, if I had to put like a through line of this whole episode, it would be goats are very useful.
They
do a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're.
I guess that brings us to our question. Goats. What are they?
Well, goats are a category of ruminant mammal that humans raise primarily for their meat, milk, and or hair and hide, depending on the type. They're also sometimes hunted in the wild. They are small to medium in size, so they're less like immediately resource intensive than other milk and meat animals like cattle, and tend to be a little bit more adaptable to different environments. Goat meat is a red meat. It's rich and a little bit funky, gamey. The milk has a little bit of a tart funk to it as well. The meat tends to be a little bit tough, so it's often used in dishes like stews where it has a chance to soften up. The milk is used fresh and also preserved in all kinds of tangy cheeses and like yogurt type situations. Goats are like a more opinionated sheep. They're like a small punk rock curious cow. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Goat milk and meat are both so like rich and kind of satiny, but also have something just so like fresh and bright about them. They take whatever meal or snack you're eating and they make it feel like you're dining outside on the kind of like bright spring day where you can just feel like the grass growing around you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like a little picnic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Buddies. delicious buddies.
Yes.
Okay, so there are a lot of breeds of goat, like somewhere from over 500 to over 1,000, depending on who you ask. We're going to get into a few-ish of those breeds in the history section, but like the thing is that humans have been keeping goats for a long time and for different purposes, you know, meat, milk, fiber, leather being the main three there. And so, you know, so we've bred for those for those purposes. And there are also a lot of points at which populations of goats have gone feral and done their own thing. So different goats are different. But very basically, goats are mammals that grow up to about 120 pounds. That's about 55 kilos, though they're often about half that size, depending on the breed. Some will reproduce throughout the year instead of just in a single season. A single doe will often have two kids, young goats, a year. And you can maintain a pretty good-sized herd with, like, dozens of does and only a couple bucks. They're a bit more prolific than sheep, which have a similar body size, so they are more commonly raised for meat than sheep are, perhaps especially in subsistence farming and in developing parts of the world. They also tend to be better at handling like heat and also low water conditions than sheep or cattle. And their weird pupils are because they're prey animals, not predators. Predators tend to have rounded pupils. Prey animals that are trying to look out for more stuff on their periphery tend to have differently shaped pupils.
I guess we should mention also, because I think sometimes I forget, people do not watch as much horror as we do. At the beginning, when we mentioned evil goats, we were, as you said, Black Phillip from The Witch, which Lauren and I were on an episode of the podcast Movie Crush to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Movie,
if you want to check it out. But yeah, they've got eyes that are very striking.
Yeah.
I can see why people were like, let's make him represent the devil.
There is a, again, this is a food show, y'all, like, but there is a really interesting history of goat symbolism in art and culture. And I tried to read enough about it in a short enough period of time that I didn't feel like I was wasting an entire day of food podcast reading about this stuff. I couldn't. It's more complicated than all that, but I think that we have, that there's like a couple places in the Bible where goats are used as a metaphor of like a strong-willed creature, and in a negative sense. And so that's where we get the like evil goat thing.
I did the same thing, hilariously. we both desperately wanted to talk about it. But yeah, it was more complicated because it was like, now you have to research this ancient demon named this.
And yeah. Like,
Well, I really can't relate this back to food, and I can tell it's going to take a lot of my time. Mm-hmm. But if you're interested, listeners.
Oh, yeah. It's out there. I feel like Robert and Joe over on Stuff to Blow Your Mind have probably talked about it at some point.
Oh, I bet they have.
If they haven't, then I will tell them to do that. Post haste.
We have a lot of sway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So go food show. Here we are. All right. Although goats do not eat as much overall as cattle, because they're just not as big, they do eat more like per volume of milk produced, as much as 3 to 4 times more per quart of milk as compared to dairy cows. Or that's what I read from a paper from the early 1900s. There might have been breeding initiatives and other technologies that have created milkier goats. I'm not sure. Goats also like need a little bit more of a controlled diet than pop culture would tell you, but they can be successfully fed with plant matter that would otherwise be considered like a waste product or a byproduct, or like, oh geez, how did that patch over there get so overgrown? Get the goats over here. They're capable of eating a wide variety of vegetation, partially because they are ruminants, meaning that they have 4 stomachs, which they use to really break down their food in multiple stages, getting a lot more nutrition out of it than, like, certainly we could. And they do chew their cud like cows. The younger animals do tend to have more tender meat, though breeding and, like, the slaughter and harvest of the meat can have a large impact. Science is still investigating this to help develop best recommendations for farmers. Animal stress matters. Super cool stuff being done around all of this. But again, sort of basically, there are two sort of grades of goat meat. Cabrito or capretto, which is meat from goats that are just a few months old. And then chevron, which is meat from goats that are over a year old. Cabrito is paler and has a finer texture. You might use it in like roasts or chops like you would lamb. Chevron is typically stewed. And because chevron can be more strongly flavored than other red meats, like for example, beef, it can stand up to like heavy seasonings in dishes like curries. And goats are just a super interesting livestock animal because it's considered so multifunctional. You know, goats might be raised primarily for a non-food function, like land clearing or their hair or hide, with their milk and or meat being harvested essentially as a byproduct. Or they can be raised specifically for the milk or for the meat. I don't think that I know of another land animal that is so, like, multi-purpose.
Yeah, when I was reading this, I couldn't think of one either. I was like, okay, yeah, this goat.
Yeah.
They're useful.
They're up to stuff, man. Okay, but you're curious about fainting goats, because of course you're curious about fainting goats. So, yeah, fainting is a little bit of a misnomer. The goats are not losing consciousness. They're just falling over. This is caused by what's basically a delay in relaxation of muscles that tense involuntarily during surprise or other excitement. Like think about when you startle, you tense up briefly. So what's happening in these goats is that they lock into that tension for several seconds. And if they were on uneven footing when they tensed up, they're likely to tip over. It's a genetic mutation that popped up in this population in the United States in Tennessee back in the 1800s. The condition is known as myotonia, and the goats are more properly called myotonic than fainting. Because this is ostensibly a food show, a strain of these goats has been bred for their meat, and they're actually known for having, like, really copious and tender meat production in their hind legs due to that, like, frequent prolonged tensing of those muscles.
Hmm.
Yeah. I worked real hard to have a food fact to tie that one in. Here we go.
Yes. Excellent.
The dairy is used to make all kinds of cheeses. In some cultures, goat meat is more of like a special occasion food to be eaten at like Christmas or Easter or Eid al-Adha, the Feast of Sacrifice. It's also a popular red meat in cultures that don't eat beef.
I feel like most of the times I've had it has been in Jamaican curry. That's
my experience
with goat. And it's so good.
It is so good.
But it is used in all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what about the nutrition?
Well, goat meat tends to be leaner than other red meats, and it has a higher rate of polyunsaturated fats, which are like the good fats. Also has a good spread of micronutrients. Eat a vegetable, drink a water. Do what you want. Yeah, I don't know.
I had a strange dream recently, Lauren.
Okay.
Where somebody confronted us and was like, when you say eat a vegetable, what do you mean? Does a tomato count?
Oh.
Oh my gosh.
Dang.
Stress dreams from
wow.
work. yeah. Eat a fruit or vegetable.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
We do have some numbers for you.
We do. As of 2020, the global goat population was estimated to be a little bit over a billion. Some 90% of that was in Asia and Africa, with nearly 40% of the world's goats living in China alone.
According to some sources that I found, goat milk is the most consumed animal milk around the world, somewhere around 60%.
It's consumed by about 60% of people around the world. By volume, more cow milk is consumed, even though fewer people drink it. Yeah. But about 19 million metric tons of goat milk was produced as of 2017. As of 2016, global goat meat production totaled some 5.6 million metric tons, about 2% of the world's meat.
Australia is the largest exporter of goat meat at 44%.
And about 90% of that is harvested wild, not farmed. It's not a super popular meat there. Only some 10% of what they produce is consumed in Australia. Ethiopia is also a major exporter, about 22% of global exports, and the United States and the United Arab Emirates import the most, about 30% and 20%, respectively. Sudan consumes the most per capita, about 8.6 pounds of goat meat per person per year. And apparently, according to Huffington Post anyway, only 23% of Americans have eaten goat meat. That was based on a survey that they were reporting on.
Yeah, I saw similar numbers where people were sort of perplexed why goat meat hasn't taken off in the United States. But it did seem, most things I read indicated, yeah, it was pretty low.
Yeah.
How many people had had it.
I'm in such a cultural bubble. Y'all have to write in and let us know your experience. And write. And I see, this is part of why I wanted to look into this whole like goats are evil thing, because I was like, is it because we have these like Puritan ideas of goats being evil, so we don't want to eat them? Is that what's going on in America with goat meat?
I thought that was gonna come up too.
I don't know, man. Humans also get up to a lot of stuff. We're very truth. Like goats in that way.
That's true. Wow, what a accurate. Wow. All right, well, we do have quite a history for you.
We do, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so, well, the common ancestor of the goat originated in parts of Asia and or the Mediterranean 11 million years ago.
Uh-huh.
So, long time. Goat remains have been found in Asia, tracing back to at least 7,000 BCE, and cave art as old as 10 to 20,000 years depicts goats.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they've been around for a minute. We've been interacting with them for a minute.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Though, once again, mystery's history on this one. But as of now, historians speculate the goat was domesticated about 10,000 years ago in the Middle East and is believed to be the second animal humans domesticated.
Right behind dogs. Yeah, yeah. The idea is that wild goats were attracted to the crops, like grains that early farmers were growing. And so people started herding the goats.
Right. And some speculate that there were multiple domestication events in various areas, but genetic evidence suggests that there was one major domestication event. And when I tell you, I was reading a very dense scientific article about this. Mm-hmm. Whoa. But that was the consensus. Like, mm-hmm. I think there's only 10% of goats that don't have the genes from this one believed
event.
Genetic.
Yeah.
But yeah, goats were pretty easy to tame and feed, so they were somewhat prized. The mutation that allowed humans to drink goat milk occurred about 7,500 years ago, somewhere in Europe and the Balkans, which only increased their usefulness. I also found a whole paper about that, found fascinating.
Mm-hmm. That was a good one.
Yes. People in this area used goats for meat. They used their skins and their pelts, their milk, their sinew for sewing, amongst other things, their horns, their bones. Their hides were used to make bottles or containers or for parchment. And the first believed proof of soap making goes back to ancient Rome and indicates that they used goat tallow, amongst other things, in the soap.
Okay.
So, yeah, once again, useful animal. Uh-huh. French goat cheese making traditions are thought to go back to 732 CE when retreating enemy forces left behind the goats that they had been using for milk in France after losing a battle. And they were like, let's start making cheese.
These are pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. We'll hang on to them. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Because of their usefulness, goats were frequently transported on long journeys by Europeans so that they could set up goat populations wherever they were going and drink fresh milk on the journey. So they were useful on the journey. And
once you got there. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Goats arrived in Australia in 1788. They were used for milk, meat, and for their fiber, and later for weed management. However, the goats escaped and eventually led to the development of a feral goat population, a population that has only grown. And in fact, when we're talking about those numbers at the top about Australian exporting goat meat, a lot of it has been feral goats.
Yeah. Yep.
The Spanish are believed to have been the ones that introduced goats to California and the North American Southwest at large in the 17th century. Where the animal flourished to the point some populations were relocated for destroying indigenous plant populations.
Oh, wow. Hmm.
Yeah. I read it was because they didn't have a natural predator, but I was like, really? In California? I don't know. It didn't really make sense to me. But anyway, they did well there. Mm-hmm. Later, when Europeans settled in North America, they brought goats with them.
Perhaps especially the English, who brought dairy breeds specifically.
And speaking of the fiber portion, Europeans had developed an interest in mohair as a fiber by the 1800s.
Yeah, and this was after like thousands of years of textile work with mohair, which is hair from Angora goats, specifically in Western Asia, which is where those goats are from. Cashmere wool from Southwest Asia and Northern India also gained wider popularity around that time. There was just a lot of interest in goat wool. Yeah.
There was. Uh-huh. Also, the U.S. Navy has a long history of transporting livestock-like goats for their milk and meat. But goats had sea legs and would eat pretty much anything as opposed to livestock-like cows. Goats can swim, too, which was good for sea travel.
Sure.
Uh-huh. I also read that goat meat was seen as a nice alternative to salted pork.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Here's an account given in 1873 by Rear Admiral Robley D. Evans about his experience trying to get milk from an agitated goat.
Oh, no.
Yeah. A quote, I found her in a very excited state of mind, apparently, having butted out the captain's steward and a marine orderly who had attempted to relieve her of her milk. One of them had tried to hold her while the other went for the milk. Procuring some warm water and exercising a little patience in the premises, we soon relieved her of the milk, which was evidently giving her pain. I thought this was funny because so many of the other things I had read previously were like, they're great to travel with. And then immediately I found this, which sounds like it was just a goat that needed some help. But
yeah, yeah. And we're all a little bit cranky when we're uncomfortable. Sure.
Oh, but traveling can get rough. You get tired.
Yeah.
But it was just funny that, like, I'm pretty sure it was from the same article. It was like, they're so easy to travel with.
And yeah, they're really tame. They get along with everybody. Yes. It butted out the captain's steward.
Gosh. And there's not much place to run on a boat.
No.
No. Huh. But, okay. As time went on, goats became mascots for the U.S. Navy during the 20th century. The Navy's first registered goat mascot was named El Cid, and he was viewed as good luck.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Yes. Moving away from the Navy, the American Milk Goat Record Association, or AMGRA, I'm going to go with AMGRA, A-M-G-R-A, an organization of American goat milk producers formed in 1903.
Yeah, you know, I didn't look up the pronunciation for this. The word is spelled M-I-L-C-H. It's a term for goats and other animals kept for milking. And I think that the idea of organizing this organization was tied to the St. Louis World's Fair that was going to be happening in 1904, and the milk goat show that was planned for the fair. It turned out that Angora goats bred for their coats were way more popular with showers that year, so the association didn't really have a lot to do, I guess. But at any rate, yes. Mm-hmm. Also, in the early 1900s, Dutch colonists in South Africa were working on developing Boer goats from local goats kept by indigenous peoples. This breed is known for growing fast and big in a variety of environments and being tasty to boot. They're now reared around the world and used to improve meat quality in other breeds of goats. There was an increased interest in goat dairy in both Europe and America between World War I and World War II, as economic troubles and food shortages had people looking for cow dairy alternatives. A scientific paper from the time also noted that goats and their milk are, quote, remarkably free from tuberculosis, which is not entirely true, but I wanted to mention it because I'm always fascinated by the concerns surrounding the dairy industry at that time, especially because we did not have human-made breast milk alternatives at the time. So if you couldn't feed an infant with breast milk, then what were you going to do about it? Pretty big.
Yeah, it comes up a lot in a lot of our episodes.
It does, yeah. From 1954 through 1995, there were U.S. government incentives to produce wool and mohair, which increased the breeding of sheep and of Angora goats for that purpose. It's kind of fallen off since then, but especially with a greater interest in goat milk and meat.
Yeah, but with various waves of immigration to the U.S. from communities that consume more goat meat, the demand for goat meat and better goat meat grew in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that led to the importation of boar and other meat breeds like the New Zealand Kiko during the 1990s.
Yes, and speaking of, but we're a food show, I went on a whole thing about goat fiber and mohair and the rise and fall of it, and in the 90s, in the U.S., it was, like, less popular, and that was one of the reasons that these other goats were kind of introduced.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was fascinating. I mean, again, I had to go through and, like, stop using the word useful at a certain point because I was just using it so much. But they really impacted so many different sectors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Goats.
Also, if you've never seen an Angora goat, they're real pretty. They're just beautiful goats. I want you to go look up some pictures of Angora goats right now. they have this really long, pretty hair, like a kind of like a sheepdog sort of, like a curly, like a And it's just a buddy. It's like clearly a buddy.
Not a buddy that will go evil. Not a buddy that is hearing whispers from the devil. Surely not.
Surely not. Never. Never.
No. No. Not our good friend. The Angora.
No. That was not the kind of goat that Black Phillip was, clearly.
No, definitely not. Well, listeners, if you have any recipes, any thoughts about goats, any knowledge about evil goats or just goats in our culture at all. Because though we are a food show, we love that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yes. We would love to hear it. In the meanwhile, we do already have some listener mail prepared for you, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with a goat coming for you. My mom said her goat Billy, if he got his eyes set on you, we better move out of the way.
Yeah. They are known for being very curious and a little bit stubborn. So yeah.
Yeah. That's what Billy sounds like.
Oh, Billy.
Oh, Billy. Arik wrote, baklava is such a wonderful dessert, and it is always interesting to see the different varieties out there. My favorite spot around here is Labad's in the Strip District. When the weather is nicer, they'll have a table set up out front selling it. It is probably my favorite baklava in Pittsburgh. I would be curious to try one with hazelnuts sometime, as that seems like it would be a pretty interesting combination. The Greek Orthodox Church near us always does a small food festival in June, and it has wonderful baklava as well, but I still give Labad's the edge. Hmm. I remember the fish fries our church, a Roman Catholic one, had growing up. Huge gatherings every Friday during Lent, and some of the best fried fish around. They also had them once a month outside of Lent. Always came with your choice of two sides, coleslaw, potato salad, fries, or mac and cheese. Just one of those childhood things you remember. Add to that the monthly spaghetti dinners, and you can see how food can gather people together. The whole Catholic thing that you mentioned pretty much covers what we were taught. Love the classics as well. The Mai Tai is a great drink, and a true one really does pack a punch. Reminds me of many a winter vacation away from the cold. I can't believe at the time Annie had not seen someone use a cocktail umbrella as a toothpick. I've seen it before. I'm still learning and growing.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Have you still not? Is this still on your bucket list?
Yeah, we'll put it on the bucket list. Lauren and I have been discussing a Savor anniversary episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've been pondering what that might be. And I was thinking maybe we could just do one that's kind of a look back and what has stuck with you and all that. And I was thinking about all of the things I have learned doing this show.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Huh.
And some of them are simple, quote, simple things. Like, oh, I didn't know that.
So. Oh, sure. No, we are all learning and growing all the time. That's a wonderful thing about being a human person.
It is true. And as we've said so many times on the show, as we've seen exemplified by so many of you listeners, also depends on the region you're in.
Oh, deeply. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And how you grew up. I do love this. I have been inundated with fish fry headlines because as part of this job, when you look up something for work, all of a sudden the data powers that be believe that this is how they can sell something to you. And I have gotten so many stories about fish fries, and I'm actually really enjoying it. They're just fun. Like, people getting together every Friday and having these fish fries. And I like looking at the menus because I'm also kind of that weirdo who's absolutely. I will never get to eat this. But
I want to know exactly what I could eat if I were there.
I want to feel some kind of jealousy of, like, what I could have.
Yeah, I want to see the pictures of the mac and cheese. I want to know what's going on with it, you know, like.
Exactly. Exactly. And this also brought back, recently I drove through my college campus for the first time in forever. And they used to have lasagna dinners. And I could see them, and I was like,
oh, wow.
I remember doing this lasagna dinner, and they're still doing it. So you're right. People do. They come together. I mean, that was also in part free food.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Free food now. We're still straight
cats. Right. You're right. What am I saying? But also, yeah, this baklava sounds great. I like that you have a favorite baklava.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to get a favorite baklava around here. Okay.
You do.
All right. Still learning. New stuff to learn about baklava. Yes, love it. Okay. Heather wrote, thank you for continuing such an enjoyable and informative podcast. I'm slightly behind an episode, so I only recently listened to your episode on apple butter. I made and canned apple butter for the first time this year, using the apples from a couple of trees in our yard. I followed a method using a slow cooker, and the results were great and way less labor-intensive. 10 hours on low with stirring every 2 hours, plus using an immersion blender as the final step, resulted in some wonderfully smooth and tasty apple butter. One thing I was waiting for while listening to the episode was the habit of eating apple butter with cottage cheese. This is known as a schmierkäse, or Schmierkäse in areas of Pennsylvania where there's a large Amish population. Note this Schmierkäse should not be confused with the version in Baltimore that's a type of cheesecake. Schmierkäse is so popular in Southwest Pennsylvania that the local Eaton Park also included cottage cheese apple butter on the salad bar. I can vouch for how tasty this is, and it's something my spouse loves to eat for a snack. This is so great. This is amazing. I've never put apple butter on my cottage cheese, but my grandmother would serve me like canned fruit and cottage cheese a lot growing up, and I still have like a deep kind of nostalgic fondness for that. I will absolutely put some apple butter on some cottage cheese like right now.
Yeah, that's not something I would have thought of, but we did talk about in that episode apple butter going well with cheese.
Yeah.
I just had never thought of cottage cheese, but yes, totally.
Why not? That's delicious.
Yeah.
I'm positive that there's a listener out there who's going cottage cheese is the worst thing on the planet, and I'm sorry that we're grossing you out right now, but...
I have that friend, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But most of my friends love cottage cheese, and I think it's great, so...
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. My household just got an immersion blender, and I'm really excited about it. I know that as a grown adult, I could have bought one for myself at any time, but I just never have. So thank you to my roommate's dad, Scotty, for bringing the joy of blended soups into our life, or more easily blended soups, I should say.
Wow, that is a joy.
Yeah.
Oof, I can't wait to hear the spoils of your immersion blender.
Oh, it's going to be so delicious.
Oh, wow. Well, before we can get the total details of your journey, we thank these listeners for writing in so much. Mm-hmm. If you would like to write in to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
Oh, we're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.